Hello, and welcome to What is Innovation? The podcast that explores the reality of a word that is in danger of losing its meaning altogether. This podcast is produced by Outlast Consulting, LLC, a boutique consultancy that helps companies use innovation principles to solve their toughest business problems. I'm your host, Jared Simmons, and I'm so excited to have Abby Okeowo. Abby is an experienced strategic advisor that leverages over 15 years of experience from McKinsey and Bulge Bracket investment banks, Goldman Sachs, Citi, and Morgan Stanley. Currently, she is the general manager for a short-term lending product within the small business card unit within Capital One. Abby, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
It's really good to see you. We go pretty far back. I won't say way back.
Maybe at least 10 years, maybe?
Yeah, at least
10. Wow.
Yeah, time flies.
It does.
It's great to see you, and I can't wait to chat about innovation. So let's dive right in. What in your mind is innovation?
So I think that's a really broad question.
Mm-hmm.
What I'll do is, to answer it, I'll break it down into something that I think is more digestible. And I'll use the frame of reference of financial services.
Mm.
So within financial services, I would think about fintech as sort of like the most innovative part of financial services.
I see.
And for fintech, I would say you could divide innovation into external or consumer-facing innovation or internal or operational innovation. And I would say for fintech, innovation could be either of those two or both.
I see. Okay.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm, it does. And so for fintech, which is financial technology, it's usually the digital side of things, right?
That's a good point. What I'm trying to separate is digital versus technical.
Yeah, that's what I asked the question.
Definitely could be digital, but I don't think it has to be digital to be fintech. It could just be technical.
Mm.
It could just be technically advanced for it to be considered fintech.
I see. And help me and others understand the difference between digital and technical in fintech.
Yeah. So digital would be like an online experience.
Mm.
When I think about technical, I think about, let's say you're innovating in the mortgage space, right?
Mm-hmm.
So for a mortgage process, let's say innovation there would be converting the entire purchase process online.
I see. So it maybe has something to do with the steps or the process or the sort of machinations of how it works, the delivery of the service.
I would say so.
Mm-hmm.
Like the reason I use real estate is because I think it's ripe for disruption.
Mm.
I think the process of getting a mortgage is very antiquated. So I would say, if you were to leverage fintech for a mortgage, I think Better is probably one of the first companies to try and do it this way, where you just go online, you fill out some forms, and you are able to follow the mortgage process like you are able to follow like food being delivered to your house.
Those are two things you would not expect to be analogous. That's amazing.
Yeah, I would say that's a good example of like fintech.
Yeah.
So to go back to your question, digital, I would say the digital aspect of that process was you being able to visually see where you are in that process.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that you were able to complete the mortgage process in a more efficient way is what made that something that technology was able to use to advance, provide some value add.
I see. So it went from technical to digital when the interface became...
That's a perfect example. Yes.
Got it. Okay.
Yes. I guess the consumer-facing visual, right? Because there's a ton of technical stuff that happens behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually why I'm saying there's external versus internal innovation, because the internal innovation, the customer doesn't even see it.
Yeah.
But it's still happening, right? Like quantum computing, artificial intelligence. That's not digital, but that's still advancements from a technical perspective. Whereas once you start to engage in user experience, engage in user design, engage in the visuals, then I would say it's more digital.
Mm, that makes so much sense. Like you said, it lines right up with the external internal model you were laying out.
Yeah, that actually worked out nicely. I wasn't even thinking about it.
When you're a structured and organized thinker, these serendipitous things happen, right? So let's go back to the external internal in the context of fintech. Give me some examples or tell me more. Let's go deeper on that.
Okay. So let's go back to the external innovation.
Mm-hmm.
I would say for something to be innovative and it's external facing, it has to either offer higher quality services to customers.
Mm-hmm.
It has to offer it at lower price points, or it has to do both.
Mm.
I'm finding it hard to think of an example of where something is innovative and it doesn't do one of those two things.
That's a very elegant definition. And it makes me think of value.
Exactly.
If something is higher quality or cost less, both of those things move the value up, right?
Exactly.
Gotcha. Okay, got it. Better quality, lower price, or both.
Yeah.
And that's consumer facing. And so it's basically the consumer's definition of innovation, a consumer facing definition of innovation.
Right. Yeah. So did you offer me something of higher value at the same price point? And thus I want the higher value one since I'm paying the same price.
Mm-hmm.
Or did you offer me the same thing at a cheaper value? And thus I want the cheaper one because it's going to save me some economics. Or are you doing both?
Mm.
All three of those situations are value added to me, and I would consider that innovative as a customer.
Mm, right, right. Okay, got it. Now, what's not in that definition is new.
Right.
So if there was a combination of existing things in the fintech world, because when I think of fintech, I think of inventions.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
New algorithms, new technologies, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
If you deliver those things within an existing infrastructure or architecture, is that innovation?
I wouldn't say so.
Uh-huh.
I would say in order for something to be innovative, it has to be new, it has to be value added, and it has to be executed.
Mm.
Right? So implicit in it being higher value or cheaper, it has to be new.
Mm, I see.
Right? So if something is just executed, but not new, then it's just an improvement.
Mm.
It's like a tweak.
Yep.
But the minute you add it being new, it jumps to innovation.
Ah.
Like, let's say you have paint on your wall. I love real estate, so I'm always going to go back to it. It's a good example for me. Let's say you have your walls that are regular paint on your wall.
Right.
When you add a new coat of paint to the wall, you added a new coat of paint, but it's not like innovation. You just slightly improved it.
I see.
But when you gut renovate your home,
yeah,
and you may change the electrical or you change the plumbing, or maybe you move the kitchen to the where the dining room is and you open it out, and then you're able to now go into the walls and bring in new high technology. Like, you've innovated your housing system and the way things work together within your home. There was new paint on your walls, but that's just a slight tweak. It's an improvement versus what it means to be innovative in your house.
Mm, that's a great example. I wonder if it matters if it's an improvement or an innovation from a consumer standpoint.
It's a good question.
Because here's what I think. Here's what I think, Abby. I think if companies think they have to be innovative to improve a consumer experience,
yeah,
then you end up trying to hit home runs all the time and you never give the consumer improvements.
Right.
And that's why I think your definition is important, because I think when people talk about innovation and only focus on innovation, they sometimes leave the programmatic, systematic improvement of the product out of the mix.
Mm.
Like, okay, well, in 2026, we're going to bring AI into this space. Okay, well, that's 4 years from now. What are you going to do to improve the consumer experience between now and then?
Yeah. I wonder if bringing in the ability to be disrupted matters. Because
mm-hmm.
I think that's how you probably tell the difference between an improvement versus innovation.
Ah, I see. So almost like innovation creates a moat.
It sets the new standard.
Mm, okay. I see.
Did you just improve it to something else that already exists? Or did you create something new that didn't exist before?
Mm.
That's what I was thinking when I thought new. New to the market.
Ah.
New to creation. Me renovating my house to a place where, like, things are working in a way they've never worked before. People have to catch up to get there.
Mm.
Me adding paint to my walls was an improvement, but that's not new.
Right, right. Someone could do that tomorrow in their house. They could paint a wall.
Exactly. How far ahead are you of your competitor?
Mm.
How easy is it for you to be disruptive with the standards you set?
So innovation forces your competition to have to innovate to keep up.
Exactly.
They can't just make improvements and keep up with what your value you're creating for your customer.
I would say so. I would say the best innovators, of course, is what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could be an innovator, but the best innovators are always one step ahead.
Oh, that's so good. Yeah, I love that a lot. You know, I grew up in consumer packaged goods and consumer facing roles and all that stuff. So my definition of innovation is biased toward whatever the consumer thinks is innovative. It leans in that direction. So I really identify with your external definition of innovation. And the internal definition speaks a lot to the engineer in me.
Yeah.
So tell me more about the internal.
Yeah. So I'm an engineer as well. So I think this is why I had to break it out into external versus internal, because I think by definition, that's what engineering is. It's looking for innovation. It's always trying to figure out how to make something more optimal. So let's say internal innovation is like quantum computing.
Right.
When you were able to rely on computers to run and solve multidimensional quantum algorithms, right? Another example of internal innovation is when you're able to leverage artificial intelligence to be more predictive for the consumer. These are all things going on
in the background,
internally on the back end. Yeah. The customer doesn't see it, but from our perspective, we probably got smarter. We were able to capture a different part of the market segment. We were able to work more efficiently. So from our perspective, it might have helped us save costs, or it might have helped us grow revenue. Right. So the same way, like, it can solve for higher quality services or lower price points for the customer, maybe it's solving for higher quality revenue for the business or lower costs for the business because it's innovating or something or making it more efficient.
Right. Right.
My issue, though, with some of the internal innovation is it's hard to confirm whether quality is lost. And I think the best way to think about that is like AI. Like, I think everyone now can laugh and say, my phone thinks it's smarter than me.
Right.
When it tries to finish sentences, or are we truly making it better, right? Just because we have AI. I think that's still something that's up for discussion.
I see. So on the external side, there's a clear arbiter of what value is and quality is, and that's the consumer.
Right.
The consumer says, this is better, and that's what's better.
Right.
But on the internal side, you're saying that's the part that's still a little fuzzy, is who defines
value add
on the internal innovation side.
Right.
And what I think tends to happen, and you tell me based on your experience, but based on my experience, tends to get defined by the inventors, by the technologists.
Right.
For better or worse.
Yeah.
But it tends to get left in the domain of the people who created it.
Yeah.
Is this better?
Yeah.
That's the way I grew up, of course, but I don't know that that's the best answer.
Yeah.
If I bake a cake and I eat a slice of it and I say it tastes delicious, but everyone else who eats it hates it, I don't think I'm right in that case.
Right. Right.
And I think there's a lot of that in a lot of technical domains, especially on the bleeding edge of things like EVs and other things. The experts in the space are defining what better looks like.
You're actually touching on something that I'm currently dealing with, a product that I'm trying to launch. I mean, I can't say too much because it hasn't been launched yet, but there's the element of people creating it that may not be the end user. And how do you determine accuracy of the opinion on the topic of value, right?
Right.
So I think for us, that's when you rely heavily on your design and consumer research team.
Exactly. Yes.
Trying to bring that level of information inside, testing it, making sure you're putting it in front of consumers as much as possible so that the person building it is not making an assumption about the end user and if it's going to be valuable to them.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
I think an example that's probably controversial is facial recognition.
Right.
Like, I'm pretty sure there's a whole bunch of people that probably thought that it was extremely innovative and value additive for everybody.
Right.
But if you're not testing it on people whose face is not accurately recognized, you're unable to really know, is this value added for everyone or not?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's a classic garbage in, garbage out story. You put biased data in, you will get biased into outputs. That's a great example. I wonder if then, by extension, as you talk about this, I wonder if internal innovation is external innovation in a company that has a customer.
An internal customer?
Has any type of customer. Because at the end of the day, like you said, everything converts back to something that is customer facing or consumer facing.
Right.
I wonder if that's why it's hard to see a place where internal innovation has a definition. I wonder if it's because it's actually the consumer at the end of the day or the shareholder.
Yeah. I think there's examples where it doesn't trace back to the consumer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think AI was an example where you have to be careful because it's actually trying to be predictive.
Mm.
But quantum computing, I think you can unequivocally say this solved this problem correctly, and it actually did it in a fraction of the time.
Right. And there was no
need to get to the customer. Like, it's just math, right? Was the answer correct or not?
Got it. Okay. Okay. I got you.
I think more definitive deliverables can be relied upon innovation and technology for innovation internally than subjective ones.
Got it. Okay. Okay. So that's interesting because, say, for example, you're making shampoo, right?
Right.
And you want to increase the foaming of this. You make it sudsier, the lather, improve the lather.
Right.
You can come up with measurements for lather. You can define average bubble dimension or whatever, the volume or whatever.
Right.
And the scientist can say, yeah, I increased those things.
Right.
But then at the end of the day, because it's a consumer benefit.
Right.
If the consumer doesn't have the same definition of what lather is, I don't think it's innovation. I think it's a failed external innovation and not an internal innovation.
I would agree with you. And I would always consider that to be external innovation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I would always consider that to be external innovation when it's consumer facing.
Mm-hmm.
Anything consumer facing, I would always put in the bucket of external.
Even if it's technology driven.
That's when it could be both.
Yeah.
I think the technology drives the external innovation, but it's still external innovation.
Got it.
So it could either be external, internal, or both.
Mm-hmm.
That to me, I would put probably more in the external innovation bucket. And I would actually add that a consumer may actually not want more lather.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It may dry their hair out, right?
Right.
That's why that's all about the consumer. Like, does it really drive value? Maybe it's a specific consumer segment. Whereas I would say internal innovation is the scientist that's putting together the variables to create, I mean, the lather. Did they have to manually put it in a, what are those called?
Oh, Erlenmeyer flask.
Yes. Did they have to put in the flask themselves?
Yeah.
Or did they have a robot that can put it in a flask for them?
Mm.
That to me is internal innovation.
Ah.
It hasn't gotten to the customer yet, but it's making the scientist's process more efficient and faster. Maybe instead of the scientist being able to test 3 things in a day, they can now test 13 because they have this robot that's doing the mixing for them.
I see. So the robot is acting on the process of creation and it's not acting on the product itself.
Yeah, I would probably say process is a good way to consider, is this an internal innovation or not? Has it optimized the process?
That is so good.
And AI optimized processes in attempt to improve consumer facing aspects, which is why I was calling that one tricky.
Yes.
But I think for it to be an internal innovation, it needs to optimize the process.
Got it. And by definition, not influence the consumer experience.
Right.
Yeah.
And if it does, it's also external. It doesn't preclude it from being internal, but it's no longer...
It's both.
Yeah, it's no longer only considered internal innovation, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to consider that because let's say you're looking for a job or something. Maybe you don't want to be consumer facing. Maybe you don't want to have to consider impact on consumers. You want something that's more definitive, more black and white. Either you put it in the vial or you didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Versus some consumers want more lather. Some consumers don't want more lather.
Yeah, I like that a lot because it also factors into budgeting, right? So
right.
As I establish my innovation budget, what do I anchor it against? Do I anchor it against, well, we're expecting X percent in growth. We want X percent more consumers to buy this because we've changed this feature. If you're doing that, then that means you're looking for external innovation.
And possibly internal as well.
Potentially. But if you don't have the distinction of your definition, what could happen is you could be investing your budget in internal innovation
I'm with you.
And sitting there waiting for the volume bump to happen.
Yes.
And that's when things get labeled as not working. Innovation doesn't work.
That's a great example. At a minimum, it needs to touch on external innovation. It could also touch on internal. But in order for you to hit that goal, it has to improve innovation externally.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what's going to drive the consumer behavior.
Yeah, exactly. This is such a useful and simple, elegant model that you've created for innovation. I like it a lot.
Thank you.
It's been a great conversation. I want to talk about what isn't innovation.
Okay.
So let's touch on that. What isn't innovation?
Well, you kind of touched upon this a little bit earlier, but let's say you consider innovation something that's new, something that is executed, not just an idea, but done.
Right.
And then something that creates value. Innovation is anything that is not all three.
Oh.
It could not be considered innovation if it is not all three. So let's say it's new and executed and it doesn't create value. That's not innovation.
Mm.
Right?
Right.
It's just like, it's novel, but what's the purpose?
Novel. That's what it is. Yeah.
But then let's say, on the other hand, it's new and creates value, but it's not executed. Then it's just a creative idea.
Mm.
And then let's also say it creates value. It's executed, but it's not new. That's kind of what we spoke about earlier in terms of it just being an improvement versus like something of disruption.
Mm.
So for it to be innovative, it has to have all three of those things. So innovation is not any of those three things minusing one of them.
Oh, man.
Actually, let me say that again. Innovation is anything that does not include all three of value add, being executed, and being new.
Mm, that's so great. I mean, you explained it so clearly. I literally sketched a Venn diagram from what you were saying while you were talking. So that was such a clear explanation. You know, if it's new and executed, it's novel. If it's new and creates valuable, it's a creative idea. If it's valuable and executed, but not new, it's an improvement. But if it's all three, it's innovation.
Yeah. I mean, I will admit that like I've been reading about innovation for a while. So these are some thoughts that I sort of like pulled together.
Yeah. Yeah.
Based on like research I've seen. And I would say this is probably something that is one of the strongest definitions that I've seen out there and something that resonates very strongly with me. So much so that I could sort of recite it back and just say that feels right.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I love that. A former guest also said that innovation is not invention.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's exactly what you're talking about. I grew up a musician as well. People will tell you, you know, you don't really write something brand new. You know, you are influenced by things you hear and see and digest, things you're exposed to.
Right.
I think it's the same with innovation, with business concepts.
Right.
There are things that are new to the market, as you described, but everything comes from somewhere else.
Yeah. So like, I would say the difference to me between innovation and invention is innovation is an invention that's brought to the market successfully.
Mm. Yeah. 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 And that element of execution is what really takes it from being a nice idea or concept or thought exercise or whatever to a real tangible thing.
And yes, and that's why you're able to think about improvements different from innovation, because you're supposed to be setting the market standard.
Right.
When you just invent something and it's not brought to market, you're not really setting a standard. You're kind of dealing with this invention in the privacy of your home.
Right, right.
It's not disrupting the market.
Right. The light bulb wasn't an innovation when it was sitting on Edison's workbench.
Exactly.
There were a lot of steps left.
Did it disrupt the market? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Did it get to the market? Is it widely consumable?
Right, right. Did the infrastructure fall in place to enable it? All those things.
Exactly. Which is to your point, how it being executed is an enabler of it being new.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a great point. This has been a fantastic conversation. And before I let you go, I just want to see if you have any advice for innovators out there.
It's a really interesting question. I don't know if I'm sitting in a seat to have the credibility to give advice to innovators. What I can do is sit in the seat of a consumer and tell you what I would see as innovative as a consumer. I think any of us can do that.
Yeah, yeah.
The advice I have for people who want to disrupt or innovate in markets that I play in, I think people can tell when you've paid attention to the consumer.
Mm, interesting.
People can tell, don't slack on user experience and user design. There's just a difference.
Mm.
Don't slack on it. And there's a psychological aspect with consumer behavior as well. And if a consumer thinks that you care about their experience, you care about the customer service, you care about improving their life, there's a level of loyalty that comes with the consumer's behavior as well. And I think that's sort of something you also want to think about when you're thinking about repeat behavior and whatnot, and longevity of a relationship with the consumer. So I'll basically say, like, don't skimp on paying attention to the consumer. Don't skimp on making sure the experience for the customer is high value. It's not just the product, it's the experience as well.
Mm.
It's the experience of getting the product. It's the experience of fixing the product.
Right.
It's the experience of asking questions about the product.
I see. So it's the full life cycle of the use of the product. It's not just selling it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It's why people love Nordstrom so much. They have a no questions asked return policy.
Mm.
So you're just going to buy stuff from there, even if it's a little bit more expensive, because this peace of mind that if something goes wrong, you could just bring it back for 10 years later.
Wow.
You know, there's also like Away versus Monos luggage.
Mm.
There's just something about the return policy for Away. Transparently, I've returned a number of Away suitcases after trying it and not liking it.
Yeah.
I could not do the same thing for Monos.
Mm.
And I have a bad taste in my mouth regarding that.
Right, right.
Even though the Monos product is better.
Right, right.
Monos product is better. It just makes me mad.
And it's higher risk, right, for you as a consumer.
Yes.
Yeah, interesting.
It feels like I'm being nickeled and dimed.
Mm, gotcha. That's fascinating. I know you are a heavy traveler. So you know of what you speak when you talk about luggage.
Yes.
You put some miles on some luggage.
Yes.
Yes.
There was actually a bag I purchased when we were at McKinsey.
Mm-hmm.
It was a bag all of us had. I'm not going to say the name, but all of us had that bag.
I know what you're talking about. Yep.
And it did what many bags did not do, which is why we all had the bag. It had the slit for the luggage. It had the slit for the laptop. It had the keychain holder.
Mm.
Like, it had everything you needed, right? Because you want the thing that has all those things. It goes in your luggage, a keychain holder, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
It broke every year to year and a half. I probably have purchased that bag at least 3 times. And I'm not purchasing it because I love the customer experience. I'm purchasing it because I can't find another product that offers me some of the things that it does.
Mm-hmm.
Once another product comes to market that gives it to me and offers me better customer experience, I'm switching.
Mm. So their features and benefit, the quality of their product, is offsetting at the moment. And the fact that they are a step ahead of the market in that feature set,
right,
is offsetting their customer experience. But that advantage will disappear the moment someone closes that performance gap because of the customer experience.
Correct.
Wow. Abby, I really appreciate the time. This has been such a fun conversation, as always. Always a fun time talking with you. Even when it's been years, we can pick right back up and keep chatting. So
I know.
Thank you so much for your time and sharing your insights around innovation being new, value added, and executed. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll have to do it again sometime.
Yeah. I'll be happy to come back. Hopefully when I have some more refined and deeper thoughts on innovation.
Well, you know where to find me. These were pretty refined and deep. So
okay.
Looking forward to version 2.
Okay. Thanks, Jared.
All right. Take care. We'd love to hear your thoughts about this week's show. You can drop us a line on Twitter at Outlast LLC, OutlastLLC, or follow us on LinkedIn where we're Outlast Consulting. Until next time, keep innovating, whatever that means.